Hello, friends, and welcome to World Build with Us, the podcast where we create fantastical worlds with help from you, our listeners. My name is Rob Hilferty, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Courtney Staples and Clark R. Rowenson. Clark, it's just so fun to like hear your voice and like have you on the podcast with us again. So I'm sure everyone knows you. You're a mainstay at this point. However, you know what? This might be people's first episode. So Clark, tell everyone who you are and what you do and why you're here.
Yeah, so I am Clark R. Rowenson. If you spend time on YouTube looking at magic system stuff, you might know me as the magic engineer, because that's what I do. I talk about magic systems all the time to help storytellers craft and repair their magic systems. That's what I love doing. I also love tabletop RPGs and world building stuff, which is how I found these guys. And I can give more shilling for my own stuff later, but that's mostly what I do, as well as coaching for writers that are struggling.
Excellent. And yes, there's plenty of time for shilling later. And that's actually an incredibly good segue for my own shilling. So on today's episode, we're actually going to be doing a world building jam session where we effectively create settings and scenarios based on some dice rolls that we get, and we try and be as creative and as interesting as possible. Normally, though, what we do is we actually build worlds based on prompts that are sent to us by you, the listener. And remember that if you want us to build your world, you can always send us a prompt through our website, where you can click the link, follow some instructions, and within a reasonable amount of time, we'll be building your world. If you want to follow us on social media, we're on Twitter at Let's World Build, or you can go ahead and subscribe to our new YouTube channel. Although I'm pretty sure I've said it's new for the last 6 weeks now, but
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like technically it's newer than anything else. That
is technically correct, Courtney. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, go do the YouTube stuff. If you prefer doing the YouTube stuff. If you're not up for the YouTubes, you can come and talk to us on our Discord with the link for that in the description. And if you're feeling particularly generous, you can always go to our Patreon, where you get access to sweet, sweet patron-only goodies like patron-only episodes, effectively twice the length of normal prompts, and all sorts of other stuff. Too Hot for Broadcast, always a fun one. Little bits and pieces of stuff that we just can't use for myriad reasons. That's up on Patreon as well. And thank you to all of our patrons for your continued support and love. Love not required to be a patron, just tossing it out there. However, with all of that out the way, we get to dive right into our world building jam session. I'm very excited. Let's break out the dice tray and let's bust open the world building jam doc. So the way that this works is that we have a couple of different things that we roll on our world building jam session. First, to kind of get the juices flowing here, you know, to get us all lubricated and whatnot. The first thing that we're going to be rolling is a genre, followed by a theme, followed by the first thing that we're going to be focusing on. And then eventually we'll throw in a twist. But for now, to get us started, we're going to start with the genre. And the genre that we're working with today is... oh, that's going to be a space Western, y'all. So we've got space Western on the table.
Oh boy, oh boy.
I know. And the theme that we're rolling for is... that's going to be a mystery. Hmm. And the first thing in our space Western mystery is going to be... an invasion. Well, that's an interesting one for sure. So we've got a mystery in a space Western, and we're focusing on an invasion. Now, Clark, as our semi-regular guest, why don't you start us off with your initial thoughts?
Well, honestly, my first thought is I think we got space Western last time I was on with the Chimera Monster Mash.
Yeah,
we did get space Western last time, and now we get to stretch our, you know, our creative muscles by showing what a different type of space Western would look like.
Yeah. So the first places my brain are going is whenever somebody says there's an invasion in the story, right? Well, anytime there's a major event in a story, a lot of times our brains try and jump right into the middle, but there's also a lot of stuff to explore when it is pending, when it's incipient, when it's happening, and even after it has been going on.
Ooh, an impending invasion is what you're suggesting, perhaps. That's interesting.
Yeah, so it might be a thing where there are shadow agents in play and the mystery is trying. So kind of a, what is
Hunt
it?
Hunt for Red October?
Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy plus Firefly type thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's where my brain is going, is there's that kind of sort of intrigue that you don't necessarily see in space westerns. It's a very odd mashup, but that's what my brain is pulling on right now.
Yeah, no, this is definitely a weirdo like mashup for sure. But this is where the fun comes in, you know, where we get to kind of make sense of things.
Yeah, I got to admit, I did watch Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, and I did not understand what the fuck was happening.
I've heard that's not uncommon.
Which makes me feel better, because it was one of those movies where it ended and I was like, what? Did I like pass out for 30 minutes? Like, what?
I'll just be happened? Honest, I've really only read summaries, but like, you get my point.
Yes, yes. Okay. No, I understand.
See, what I had in mind was more of a Hunt for Red October situation, which is like, there is a rogue nuclear submarine that is Russian and it's heading towards the United States and no one understands why or what it's doing, and there's very little communication. And so like, this is obviously during the Cold War, and like things are ratcheting up and there's like a bunch of tension. And so it's like, is this a precursor to an invasion? Or if we go in a different direction, is this grounds for invasion? You know, so if the mystery is something or someone is missing and their absence or its absence is cause for an invasion, I feel like that's a good kind of inroad to what we can do with, especially in like a space western type situation.
Yeah, I do like the idea of defection as a way to do it. And like to tie in, I mean, Red October had this too, but also Tinker Tailor, like the idea of spies in the midst and you can't really trust anyone. And
yeah,
I think that would be fun to do and like have that really high stakes. I mean, I don't want to like copy Red October 100%, but just that really tense navigating through star systems, trying to evade whoever they're defecting from, trying to get to potentially a frontier that has more freedom or something.
Yeah, because this is where like the Western part is kind of escaping me. I'm kind of thinking like a 310 to Yuma type situation, if y'all have seen that.
I have not. It's good.
It is pretty good, yeah. It's effectively, there is the leader of a gang, and he has to make this train, and he's being escorted there by a bunch of local law folk. And as they're getting him to his 310 to Yuma, which is the train, his gang starts to attack them and tries to free their leader en route to the train that he has to catch.
Okay.
Yeah. So like that's another way that we might be able to do it as well, where maybe like some high profile person was captured or something like that. But in actuality, it was just a defection, for example. Like that might be kind of interesting as well.
Maybe it's like a bounty hunter who's been captured or who maybe had turned himself in unbeknownst to his crew, his gang or whatever. And they're kind of following along, trying to free him, even if that's not what he necessarily wants, like to bring in some of the mystery aspect of it.
Well, because what's interesting here is where we're getting the friction is not the space western and the mystery. Where we're getting the friction is the space western and invasion.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of westerns are about like isolation and like, you know, remote cowboy justice type thing, which those aren't usually the places that get invaded. But I guess something that might help is, could we talk a bit more about what the main tropes and beats of space western are, so that maybe we can latch on to some of that? Because I really like the idea of there being a mystery that either tells us there is an invasion coming, or the solution of this mystery warrants an invasion. But I think we need to step up the space western side, and I just need to know a little bit more about that subgenre for us to do that.
So I'll be happy to do that in just a moment, but you definitely sparked something in me as you were talking, Clark.
Same, yeah.
So invasion is in fact the theme, and like, yeah, invasions are normally pretty big, but what about a basic little home invasion, right? All of a sudden, that scale changes, and suddenly you can feel like an invasion of a home or of a town, and it feels more westerny in that regard, right? Like, it is no longer this grand scale thing. We can scale it down to a singular area and still make it work with the theme. Because again, you're right. Invasion is kind of like a grandiose typically thing, but invasion can mean so many different things as well.
It could. Yeah. It could just be a gang invading a town, honestly.
Yeah. And yes. Another part to not necessarily of space westerns, but western as a genre is like the invasion of indigenous territories by kind of colonial imperialist settlers and groups and stuff. So that could be another
That's
thing.
That's part of like, where my brain was going.
Yeah. Like if we're dealing with maybe a planet that has like indigenous life on it and all of a sudden some other group shows up and tries to take over.
Okay. Let's tie this in with kind of the stuff that we were tinkering with before, where I still feel like the defection angle can still work very well. Right.
So I still want to know some more about the nuts and bolts of
space western. Right. Damn it. Okay. I think that it takes a lot of the tropes of westerns and just relocates it to space. So some typical things that I think of when I think of a space western is, as you kind of mentioned before, somewhat of an isolation from true quote unquote civilization, which typically means big factories, big cities, etc. What it effectively means is there is a sense of isolation that separates a group of people from larger society. And as a result, I think what Westerns typically do or they tend to do is I will say this. I genuinely think that Westerns share a lot of DNA with like zombie movies.
Yeah, and horror.
Yeah, in that like it's kind of like, okay, what happens when you strip away the quote-unquote veneer of civilization, right? And yeah, I would say that there's a lot of that. There's a lot of desolate landscapes. I think that Westerns as an aesthetic owes a lot to the American West, right? Because that's what they're named after all. But like the aesthetic is also an important thing because, you know, a very famous space western would be Star Wars. And you can argue that it's not, but you're fucking wrong because it has so many like space western tropes in it. You know, like it's pretty well known that it's effectively an amalgamation of the Man with No Name trilogy, the Yojimbo trilogy, and that other Kurosawa movie that I cannot remember for the life of me. But yeah, it's effectively all those things mashed up into like a spaceport and then bam, there we go. But yeah, those are the big things that I think of when I think of space western. Courtney, what would you add to that?
I think there's like often definitely an element of the man, like some sort of civilization trying to gain power over a group. So it's like the conflict of like freedom fighters versus the system or the man or what have you.
Yeah, freedom is a huge thing.
Yeah, independence. Huge. Yeah.
And also to kind of piggyback off of that, like when you say the man, you meant like a system, but also it is like a very stereotypically masculine genre, right? Like it is very much like the, oh, that's the man with no name, you know, like it's all about the individual. And I would love to try and subvert some of that if we can, just because I feel like if we're in space, I feel like that's the perfect time to do it. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like a lot of that was familiar. That definitely helped. Cause I do have some more ideas spinning now. Mm-hmm. So I do like the home invasion angle. We could also have it be where, maybe this is too cyberpunk, but I'm thinking like it's a corporate or organizational invasion where somebody has left the central systems, but they were important to some of the large government bodies or a powerful faction, and they are sending waves and waves of forces invading the rims to find this person and bring them back.
Like somebody left with a bit of knowledge that they weren't supposed to take with them or something like that.
Yeah, or they're just the CEO's son, or maybe they're the CEO themselves, and they're like, "No, you can't leave. We need you running things."
Yeah, no, I'm on that. Except there's like a faux kidnapping element to it, right? Or the circumstances of the CEO disappearing are mysterious. So the corporation assumes that they were kidnapped, but in reality, like, they're on the run trying to escape from the life because they, maybe there's some like revelation. They're like, oh shit, what have I been doing? You know, or like, they just kind of snap morally and they're like, I've got to go atone for my sins or like go do something better with my life than what I've been doing.
Yeah. It could also be like, one of you had said like the CEO's son or something. And I kind of like that angle of this youthful, naive approach to it. And maybe it's not necessarily like a full moral, ethical dilemma, but almost like they romanticize the idea of being on the frontier. Like they've lived their entire life in this like giant mega city of a planet. And they want to experience what life is like out there on the rim. But of course they don't think about like what they're going to be bringing to those planets and like what kind of danger they're going to force on them.
Yeah. You know, like once I hit 19, I decided to go on a spiritual walkabout in like the outer rims, like near the aggro worlds, not like on an aggro world. Cause that's like a little bit too touristy, but like I found like a pristine planet that was completely aggro, like no corpo stuff on there at all. And I just, you know, I had my spiritual awakening there.
FTL shipments only come through like once every couple of weeks. So you're totally on your own out there.
Yeah. Bro, have you been disconnected from the world like that? I don't think so.
I do think so. I think something else we could do is we could have a suit. So I really like that the mystery is both. It is around finding this person and dealing with the situation. Mm-hmm. And that's where you can have that defector. And it's even better if the person who is doing this hunting, like say it's kind of a space Pinkerton agent, sort of. Very often people would end up in the West to escape the law in the East. And some of them ended up becoming the law in the West, which was very interesting. So they might be somebody who is out there. I'm like, yeah, I do jobs for hire from the core all the time, but I don't want people out here or they're going to realize who I am. And then I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. So it's a combined thing. If I need to solve this mystery before they send their full forces, because once they do, there's going to be somebody that recognizes me and then I'm in deep.
And we've got a ticking clock element there as well, which is always good.
Maybe it's like a bodyguard of the CEO or like a former employee, some like high level person who left abruptly.
So then the invasion matters to the main character and not just the people of the town being like, we don't want all of these outsiders here. It's like, no, we got to figure this out before the quote invasion happens or me and probably a lot of us here are just straight up done because they're just going to cuff us or kill us and then take our bodies back.
Yeah. One thing I do want to avoid is like the, I guess not necessarily white in this case, but the white savior trope of like in Westerns typically or in movies like that where the white guy shows up and like saves the day, even though he often brings all the shit with him.
Yeah.
So I think it could be cool to like focus on one of like the indigenous groups of the planet that's getting all the shit and focus on their point of view too. And like make it clear, like, no, these guys like are bringing this to us. They're not saving us. They're like the reason that we're in such deep shit right now.
Yeah. The other trope we have to watch out for is the noble savage.
Yes. Yeah.
But I do think like the main character could be somebody who's part of that indigenous group, tried going to the core planets, and because of prejudice and other systemic problems, ended up in a lot of trouble, not necessarily their fault, and then had to flee back to their region and is now constantly worried.
I like that.
I mean, maybe that's a little too real, but that's pretty standard.
I like that.
Funny enough, I was willing to go like make it even more uncomfortable. Because I had it in mind that it's like, oh, this was effectively like a sideshow token hire, right? Oh. It's like, oh, they're from this group. Oh, man, get them into the office. We got to see what that's like, right? Like that level of like systemic disturbing racism that exists out there, you know?
Yeah, like World's Fair type thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the agency doesn't necessarily care if this is solved or not, which is... where when the person comes to him, we're like, we need somebody to do this. Like, you're a jerk. But, oh, look, we do have somebody out there. And they're definitely one of our best agents.
I think what we can do as well is we can add some depth to this character by saying, like, they actually chose to go at first, right? And then after a while, they recognized how soul-destroying it actually truly is, right?
Yeah.
Not to mention, like, what Clark said, like, the horrific prejudice that they would experience pretty consistently, right? Then maybe that's when they snap and they kind of, you know, leave the corporation. And they did some shady shit on the way there, because we always love a conflicted, you know, Western hero, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then that tension could continue to build for this person, where even after they've successfully completed, if you wanted to turn this into a longer series, after that initial mystery is solved and resolved, like, parts of the core systems might be paying more attention to this planet now. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we don't know. No, like, I don't want you to realize there's anything of value here. I see the value here, but I don't want you to realize it. And then that could lead into the longer, quote, invasion arc, right?
Yeah. Oh, I was thinking too, like, the way that this person, this main character, like, left the core after they'd gone there, maybe they took something from the corporation, they stole something, but it wasn't enough to be, like, tracked down completely, but it's enough for him to be, like, on the radar and definitely uncomfortable with the attention, and maybe it's something that ended up benefiting his planet. So for them to take that back, that would be terrible.
Right.
We could make it something deeply personal or something like that as well. Like maybe there was some, like, fetishism going on with the corporate CEO at the time. You know, it was like, you know, those guys who are, like, way too into, you know, like, Native American studies.
Yeah.
Or, you know, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Or like the people who are, like, way too into a certain, like, group of people to the point where it's like, this is vaguely offensive that you have a collection of their stuff. I feel like there could be one of that. Like, the thing that they took, the person took as they escaped, really didn't have much monetary value. So it's like, they think that what they did was going to get them into serious trouble. But in reality, like, the CEO barely noticed it was gone. But like, it was something that was, like, had deep either religious or cultural value to him. And he recognized it too late, perhaps. You know?
Yeah.
No, I like that.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys. I'm feeling pretty solid Western vibes, because you've got the searching from town to town and planet to planet, trying to stage up raids, trying to track down and find this person who, if depending on how we wanted to build them, is either trying to escape notice or is doing the whole, I need to have, like, the full experience of the wilds, and ends up in some dangerous situations.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fun stuff to go around with this.
100%. Agreed.
Now, here's where we potentially throw some wrenches into this space train, because we've got to roll for a twist. And this twist, I think anime might still be on the table. So let's see how it goes. Actually, there's a very, very good space Western anime. So I'm like, I'm not even going to be. There's several, actually, now that I think about it. Anyway, let's roll the twist and see what kind of anime we get. And our twist is: kill or revive a major character. Who's dying? I feel like we have some good options here.
Yeah, nobody's died yet that we know of.
Yeah, so who are we killing off? Part of me is thinking that, like, it's the CEO's son, but I'm not sure how narratively satisfying that might be.
It could be that, like, in some situation where he's put himself into danger because he's naive and a bit ignorant as to what's going on, and maybe the main character is trying to save him but can't in the end. Like, as the audience, you expect him to be successful in saving him, but he just can't. And then that, of course, would bring a lot of suspicion onto our main character and his planet, potentially.
The main problem we have with this twist is we don't have very many characters.
Yeah.
Like, we've only got a couple identified, which makes it tricky. But I mean, something else that could happen is somebody important to the protagonist, somebody important to the CEO. If we're looking at a series more than just one narrative arc, right, and we do go into this larger invasion thing, we could end up with the death and revivification of the protagonist themselves. And if we wanted, that could be something where they end up even more deeply embedded in this network and organization that they don't want to be part of and we're trying to distance themselves from.
Yeah, I was thinking potentially the main character could die too, but, like, what if we kind of switch it up and that he does actually just die, but maybe his role is taken on then, because we were talking earlier about how Westerns are often very masculine and like men
individualistic,
being men out on the frontier. What if we like put that then on like maybe this person's wife and daughter or something?
I mean, we could also just make the main character a woman from the get-go.
Yeah, that's also true. Yeah.
What we could also do is suddenly shift the focus of the story from this is the bad decisions of an individual. This is from the lens of an individual person, right? And then shift that focus to the small community that this person has brought hell to, right? Mm-hmm. And that might be an interesting subversion of the highly individualistic Western aspect, but also something that is more akin to like a space part of the space Western. Like in sci-fi settings, there's typically a greater emphasis placed on community in that way, or on expansion and advancement, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, right, like we can start it off like a fairly stereotypically Western style thing where you get the origin point of this character about how they're on the run, but also they're looking for this person, and like that the corporate invasion thing is something that they bring to this town, and that's where the story actually starts, right?
Yeah. It could also be like the son of the CEO or kid of the CEO ends up getting the main character killed through his ignorance and naive behavior and stuff, and then has to basically live with knowing that he's brought hell down on this community, and like you were saying, turn the focus onto the community and all of a sudden bring out all these characters who had been on the sidelines before, family members and community leaders and kids and stuff like that, who are now staring at this high ranking, I don't know, young adult, teenager, whatever, from the inner core being like, you ruined our lives. Like, don't even try to do anything anymore, because the more you try to do stuff, the more you're probably just going to fuck it up. So you need to like sit down and let us attempt to clean up this mess.
Or it's like, well, what's preventing, and this is where even more conflict can come into it, right? What's preventing A, him from turning himself in, B, them turning them over to the corpo people, and C, third thing, like, I feel like there was a great phrase I heard recently where it's like, don't cause problems, cause dilemmas, where, you know, a problem is something that has a solution to it, and a dilemma has many answers, all of which are bad, right? And I feel
it sounds like just an Alexander quote.
I don't think it is. It's from somewhere else, but, you know, like, shout out to Justin anyway. You know, however, I think this is a situation where we can absolutely introduce that, where it's like the drama comes from the fallout of this thing happening, right?
Okay.
And then we can tangle it all up. And frankly, I don't want to solve this because I feel like this is where you would start the story or the game, right? Where you start when things are at their most complicated and messy, and then you get to see how the whole situation tends to play out at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to think in terms of trying to reconcile the twist, because I do like that as a starting point for this. And something I think that could continue that even while it is resolving some of this is if there is a moment, especially if we dig in and we give the kid of the CEO good reasons to have left, and they're not just, you know,
It seems like we need to add an additional layer of mystery to this story, right? To keep it kind of going just a little bit more, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I do like the idea of giving the CEO's kid some more character rather than just like, oh, he's an idiot running out here, running away for no reason. Like maybe there's some sort of abuse involved that they were trying to get away from, something along those lines.
And this is a mystery that can just keep unfolding, because it starts as a simple job of you need to find this person and return them. But then that starts presenting the dilemmas of like, yeah, but here's the truth of the situation. Your employer isn't who you thought they were, and your target isn't who you thought they were. The relationship between them isn't who you thought they were. You're taking too long. So now they're going to start doing these things, meaning you have choices, because you're at the point where you're almost successful and you could potentially hand them over. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the death and resurrection, part of what I'm thinking is it might be interesting if the person who starts as the main character, and maybe they're both women, the protagonist and the scion that fled, has an important role in the group and in the community. And at the end, with the death of that person, part of the final dilemma, the scion ends up taking over their role within the community.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a literal resurrection, but it's sort of a passing of the torch. And that can be part of, I really liked what you said, Courtney, of them being like, stop doing your stuff, and them being like, okay, I get it. I'm going to step into this role where I am. I don't quite know what the role is, but like, I am here to help at your direction and your behest, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's what I find complicated about that and interesting at the same time. So what I'm hearing is the scion, the person who is the progeny of the CEO, right? That's what we're going with. That's what you mean by scion?
Or some powerful person from the core. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So this rich kid comes into this community of indigenous people and is now tasked with taking over a part of their community, right? That's what you're suggesting.
I think to keep it from that like white savior trope.
No, that's what I'm getting at. Hold on. But I just want to lay it out there first that's what's effectively happening, right?
That wasn't what I had in my head, but go on.
Right. So here's what I think can be interesting with this whole situation, and we can make the scion a little bit more interesting or complex as well, or we can just completely subvert the trope. We make it so that's what they think that they want to do, or that's what they think that they're trying to do, and they don't realize that their own selfishness is directly harming the community that they're quote unquote trying to help or save, right? That way we can subvert that trope using POV as a means to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I definitely thought that's what Clark was getting at, as far as like this, maybe some sort of like lawbringer or protector type is killed ultimately because of the actions of this kid, teenager, whatever. And rather than like immediately being able to save this community, instead that person needs to like make amends and like really put in the work. And they're not going to be good at this job at first. They're probably going to suck and they're probably going to fuck things up a bit. But they're also going to be like taking orders from whoever is actually in charge, rather than doing stuff on their own.
So what about this? If our original protagonist was this kind of Pinkerton agent who is there to fill like a quota role, not because the agency or anybody's actually cares about having influence out there or anything. I don't know if this would be enough of a subversion or not, but what if the scion then pretends to be the dead protagonist? Not because they're like, oh, I'm going to be a savior as a community, but just so they can be like, well, I can be this person on paper so that nobody else comes out here.
Oh, I see.
Like, basically, by me staying here and pretending to be this person, I'm basically preventing more people like me from showing up.
Yeah, so they, like, send out, like, the log reports that they're supposed to send, or maybe they use like a voice changer if they need to like record anything.
Yeah. I don't know if that still makes them the white savior, but I don't know if like doing some of the POV you're talking about, Rob, where it's like, oh, I recognize that I'm trying to be like the savior of these people. And maybe if I do this, I can like stop. I don't know if that's any better now that I'm saying it, but
no, I do like that. Cause it also like, it's not a heroic role. They're really just like pretending to be somebody that they're not, as almost like atoning for their sin of going out there and getting the person killed in the first place, and what they thought was going to be a fun free adventure on the frontier, as like they're now stuck in this role and they need to stay there.
Because part of the white savior trope, part of the problem with the white savior trope, is when an external person shows up and saves the people from themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's part of why I was thinking this was a subversion, is this outsider showed up, but they're not saving the people from themselves. They are saving the people from other outsiders.
Mm.
And in a way of just like, I know what's going to happen if this is here and it's shitty and it's not comfortable and nobody wants me here, but I'm going to, it's a fine line.
Yeah,
it is. Okay. we have some science fiction nonsense happening. This is the space part of space Western, correct?
Yes.
What if the death and revivification thing is effectively the same two people, right? So the Pinkerton agent does find the corporate fuck up child, right? Mm-hmm. And in a struggle or something, the Scion kills the Pinkerton agent by accident and effectively body swaps with them, right?
I think that's what Clark is implying, right?
But we can do it as a technology way, so it's like an actual mind swap, role swap.
That's what I'm suggesting, is that it's a literal, you know, it's not just that they're taking on the identity as in on paper, but like the literal body. So if you want to make an even starker critique of white saviorism, like, why not, you know, like have performative aspects of it, or perform what is effectively brownface, right? Like, to this kind of aspect to it, if you want to make it really deeply uncomfortable, to the point where, like, frankly, we're not the people to be writing this story at this point.
Yeah. You know what
I
mean?
But I still think that has that idea, that concept has some interesting legs to it. But, you know.
Yeah.
And on that deeply uncomfortable note, I feel like that's a good place to stop and switch over to another jam. What do y'all think? Do we have any final thoughts before we move on?
That sounds good to me.
Yeah, that works. I could see the body swap thing going either way, depending. Because I feel like that would have an even worse impact on the community.
Yes.
In a way.
I agree. And I mean, and that might be very interesting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But okay, so let's go ahead and roll for our second jam session. So our genre this time is... Oh, we're feeling very sci-fi today because we've got cyberpunk on the menu. And the theme within this cyberpunk universe is going to be... something forbidden. And then the first thing that we're focusing on is going to be... very appropriate for cyberpunk, something brand new. So my first thought initially goes to, oh, it's a brand new piece of technology. So of course I'm going to ask that maybe we think of something else that's brand new in a cyberpunk world. With all that in mind, Courtney, what do you got in mind for us?
My first thought when you rolled something forbidden for the theme was death as the forbidden thing.
Oh, okay.
Like, this is a, and to tie in that something brand new, like maybe this is a cyberpunk setting that has been technologically advanced for an extended period to the point where people just don't die very often unless it's like really intentional.
Sure.
Because through robotics and technology, they've been given effectively immortality.
So not to just completely rip off of Altered Carbon, but what about Altered Carbon?
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
But what if Altered Carbon, though?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that basic technology, because in Altered Carbon, it has been around for a while. Mm-hmm. I think it would be very interesting to like see that transition of when it first comes out and how that starts disrupting things and all of that.
Can I tell you my very dumb idea? Mm-hmm. I want to express to you my very dumb idea. Okay, what if immortality was just on a free trial basis? Because, again, we've got to get the punk aspect of cyberpunk in there. And punk typically means very anti-corporate, very anti-fascist, right? So, and this means, like, I'm just thinking, like, what would a shitty giant corporation who has the capability of creating immortality do? Well, they'd eventually let you know that your free immortality trial has gone out. And now, guess what? Y'all got to start paying us. You're going to start dying. Right? Yeah.
No, I love it.
It's real.
So
dumb.
It's Altered Carbon with the cortical stacks, except you have to have a subscription for your stack.
What is a cortical stack?
Like? Oh, that's the discs that they put into their spine that holds people's consciousness in. Show, like, that's what your existence lives on, and they can be backed up in some ways. But I'm just picturing, like, you have that thing, basically the singularity. You get transformed or moved into the machine. And that is fine as long as you pay your subscription.
Another way to think about it is, like, what if immortality is given to the lower classes by way of lottery, so that it's not a subscription, but people are so drawn to the idea of living forever that they continuously consume products that give them a chance at getting this immortality, like it's legit lotto tickets or just like sweepstakes
box
kind of
tops
things
for immortality.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. Kind of like the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, like get the golden wrapper and win immortality. Except there's like two golden wrappers in the entire planet or something.
And at least one of them is rigged towards people who are like,
oh yeah,
favored by the corporation. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So it's all like, it's all basically a scam to just funnel more money into the corporation.
Well,
that's
also
really good.
I like it as a combination of the two, right? Is if you find your golden ticket, it's a lifetime subscription. But if you read the fine print, a lifetime subscription is defined as 60 years.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like you got one lifetime. If you want another one, you have to start paying.
Yeah.
Wait, that's really good.
I like that.
That's, oh man, that's really, really good. Because then what happens is like, oh, I'm 120 years old and my time is coming through. So what does that person start to do? They're going to start buying lotto tickets like crazy because they need that extra 60 years, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we could like bring in the shitty, what is it, like dark UI, dark UX type stuff that happens where happened recently with Diablo 4, where people had battle passes from buying the premium version of the game, and when you open up a certain tab in the game that you check very frequently, the redeem battle pass option was auto highlighted. You click it once and it's like redeemed.
I didn't hear about this is awful.
People are furious about it, understandably.
I'm very glad that I did not in fact buy Diablo 4.
And I think we could take glossing past our own dystopian nightmare fuel. I think we can take that in the story even further if you wanted to get really big scale, because like people get nasty crazy about money stuff in dystopian futures, is if there were entire organizations whose goal was to drive down the average lifespan so that people have to renew their subscriptions more frequently.
Like smoking tobacco suddenly makes a big popular like comeback or something like
that. Smoking tobacco, promoting gang violence, starting wars, stuff like that.
See, this is too real, because I'm like, oh, you mean like gutting education systems and then, you know, creating a cycle of poverty and crime? Yeah. God, I hate this. I hate it so much. But yeah, that's accurate. I mean, that's fair.
Yeah. If we want to continue to pull from depressing things related to real life, is like industrialized prison systems and the profits from that. And maybe in the cyberpunk future, like one of the things that you can do to boost your chances of getting immortality is like betting on basically arena fights that prisoners take part in.
Yeah.
As like another consumption thing to get these chances at immortality.
Every fight takes like X amount of months off of your prison sentence, you know?
Yeah, it could be that. Yeah.
There's so much we could do with this, because especially if we steal more from Altered Carbon, a big part of how it works is then physical bodies, they just call them sleeves because you get your mind uploaded into them. And if that's the route it goes, then you as a chunk of data become the customer, where then there's all different kinds of things they can sell, of being like, okay, you want your subscription back. Here's a number of ways that you can fund that, right? You do an indentured service for these types of things for this long, and then you'll get a brand new sleeve at this tier, and you'll get it for its whole life.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or like all of the click farms that exist in, you know, like outside the States and stuff like that, where they just have like terrible conditions, and like people just like, oh, I'm like commenting and subscribing on all these YouTubes, and I'm doing all this like incredibly menial labor and incredibly terrible. Yeah, that works very well.
Yeah.
And
that if we want to focus on something brand new, I like to think that if it's brand new, then it happened very recently. So maybe we can kind of have it so the first person who was granted a lifetime subscription recently died, or something like that. If I want to steal a little bit from like Children of Men, for example, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
that.
The brand new part could be the subscription setup. Is like they have just been spamming this and spamming this, and people have been buying in because they've been using this lifetime subscription thing, and now people are reaching the end of their life.
And reading that fine print.
And learning that their definition of life term was the life of your sleeve.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Hear me out. Hear me out. In the beginning as well, guess what? They were tossing those golden tickets out like crazy.
Uh-huh.
You know, like they're making it so like, bam, here you go. You got some free mortality. Bam, bam, bam. Just tossing it out there like crazy, right? And then eventually it comes due. And then the first person who like got it, that, you know, like very famously died, and then that causes this kind of surge of panic, right? Because it's like, this was the trial version person who got it maybe a year or two before it actually hit the market, and so now everyone realizes that they only have a year or two before their own subscriptions that they got very easily start to run out,
right?
That's great. That's fucking awful. Yes.
Another piece of media to reference is the movie Sorry to Bother You, which is about
bringing
like
in giant horse cocks. Courtney, what are you doing here?
Spoilers, Rob. No,
it's there's more... no fucking spoiler there.
No, but so anyway, it's more about like the sort of company town thing that was in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where it was like it was basically like a pseudo Amazon corporation where you could work for them and you would be provided housing, except the housing was like a bunk bed.
Literally just slavery. It's indentured servitude.
It's basically just that. But just that imagery of like all these people rushing in to attempt to get these quote unquote good jobs that will potentially have the slim chance of extending their life a little bit.
Boy, living in modernity sure does suck, doesn't it? just want to toss that out there a little bit.
Yeah, it's got some ups and some downs, there's some good that goes with it. I repeatedly try and remind myself.
Modern medicine is pretty great, you guys. Also, as a woman, I appreciate having the right to vote. That's cool, too.
Yeah. All right, moving on before the spiral's too fast, because I'm right on the edge there.
We're just staring at our computer screens blankly. Like.
Literally just, you know that comic where it's like, how to be an adult, and one of it is like, don't let the existential dread settle in?
Don't let it in. Yeah.
Don't let it in. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's how I feel.
And then it's like, make sure you get 8 hours of sleep every night is the next part. Yeah.
Do exercise regularly. Don't let it settle in. Don't let it settle in.
Anyway.
Okay. I feel like, what was our theme? It was...
Something forbidden.
Something forbidden. Okay. So let's talk about that a little bit more, I suppose. Because I feel like... What's the forbidden thing exactly here? Is it death? Is that what you suggested, Courtney?
Yeah. At the beginning, I was thinking like, death is like taboo. People don't really die anymore. Right. But I think that we've established a bit of a different setting than that. But maybe it's like something forbidden is like giving in to death in a way. Like, wait, you're not trying to get a chance at this. You're not buying all this stuff that could give you lottery tickets towards immortality.
I mean, another thing, like, there's a lot of stuff that we could make forbidden as part of this, right? There could be specific groups where, again, like in Altered Carbon, there's groups that see this technology as forbidden. It's it's not allowable. Or there could be things that become forbidden as a result of this technology coming out. So this is one thing that is sort of a pet peeve of mine, where there's a lot of stuff where people get immortality, but then they never talk about population growth. So it might be that what becomes forbidden is having new children.
I could see that.
At least having children without very strict permits, which lets us get into a whole other slew of cyberpunk dystopian nonsense.
Yeah, and to me that also suggests that maybe your lifetime token is transferable to, you know, like to offspring and progeny and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay, hear me out. What if maybe there's like an open source version of immortality, and that is the thing that's suddenly very forbidden, right? Because it's like outside of corporate control, right?
Like Netrunners hacked into the system and like developed their own based on the source code.
You know, a cracked version has always existed, right? Like to get around it. but it wasn't always 100% reliable.
Mm-hmm.
But suddenly this open source version is way worse than anything the other corpos could ever imagine. And so it's like, fuck, we need to crush this thing. We need to find it and purge it, you know, like from everything.
So mm-hmm. what if that technique or whatever is basically an override that allows you to externally go up to a sleeve and override the consciousness that is in it?
Oh,
and it's hacky and it's buggy as all hell. So it's not something that the rich are going to do, but that will make it something that the rich are terrified of.
Yeah, that's horrifying in many ways.
That is terrifying.
Yeah.
Yep. Because it's like, yeah, you can't afford your own sleeve. That's fine. Just go up and steal a rich person's sleeve. And yeah, there's going to be a little quirks, but your life is going to be much better in that body than it is right now. I can tell you that much.
What's that Cronenberg movie where they assassinate people by possessing them? I think it's literally called Possessor.
I don't know. No, that sounds great, though.
Sure.
Yeah, that's I'm getting very strong echoes of that as well in this one. Okay. Hear me out. I got another idea. Yes. I love that. It's horrifying. I hate it. Okay. So, you know, like normally if we're doing this from a role-playing game standpoint, we do this from like the heroic, you know, open source, you know, like we're the hackers, man. We want this open and free, you know, like fuck the corpos. Let's do it from the opposite side, right? Mm-hmm. Let's suggest that we are the corpos, or not necessarily the corpos, but people who are working mm-hmm. for the corpos, right? So I'm imagining a sort of Suicide Squad-esque level of circumstance where it's like, hey, you're all about to run out of your lifetime passes. Well, guess what? You can get 5 lifetime passes, or like a big boost in money, or like a corporate position, like whatever the corporation promised you, if you go out and find this source code and destroy it, or find the people mm-hmm. who are distributing it and destroy it, right?
Right.
So that way you can make a whole team full of morally gray, awful characters who might be selfish, might not care about the greater good, you know, all that good stuff.
Right. Yeah. Well, and then especially if this software is what they're trying to hunt down, that comes with the implied threat of like, yeah, we have these great promises, but we have to survive unjacked until then.
Mm.
Because yeah. if somebody hijacks our sleeve, you're done. You mm-hmm. now have a form of permanent death, even for people who, in theory, have immortality.
Mm-hmm.
It could also be an open bounty of sorts. Like the upper class puts out this alert about, you know, forbidden new technology that's terrible. And obviously, they're probably going to make up stuff that it does to you when you use it. But
Oh yeah. Corporate propaganda is everywhere.
Yeah. 100%. But then, like, basically setting the public loose to find this stuff and track it down and get rid of it in return mm-hmm. for, like you said, the 5 lifetimes or whatever that they're offering. So it could be, this is like one band of people that have grouped together in an effort to try mm-hmm. to find it. But there's a bunch of other people doing the same thing, or like independent people mm-hmm. working solo on this, or people just like going ballistic and doing terrible things to find out how to get access to it.
Well, where that is interesting is because that is now setting all 3 of the major classes against each other. Because that kind of tactic of basically using corporate propaganda to promote and encourage people to go off and do these things, that's only going to work on like the middle class.
Mm.
Like the middle class are going to be the ones who are going to be the target of the propaganda and will be willing to go out and do these things against the people less fortunate than them. Because if you're not in the middle class, you're going to be like, well, I'm going to use the software because as terrible as it is, it's my only shot at ever getting mm-hmm. something like this.
Right.
Yeah. It's like they're constructing a hierarchy that exists already, but they're like really amplifying it to an extreme. Yeah.
I mean, the most common tactic, if we're talking about like rich people in history, it's like make the middle class hate the lower class, right? Like that's one of the most common like solidarity busting tactics that they've ever used ever.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's all awful and great.
Yeah, and I was going to say awesome and terrible, but yep.
Yeah. Any number of those words.
Yeah. So here's one thing. We've got a twist coming up. I've already got an interesting twist, and I want to see how well it's going to line up here. So let's roll for this twist, because we've got a really solid foundation here. And our twist this time is family gets involved.
Hmm.
All right. Well, that's an interesting one for sure.
That has some dark implications.
Very much so, Courtney. You're probably loving it right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the twist that I had in mind. So one, thematically, what this kind of new freeware that takes over someone else's sleeve is effectively doing, you're murdering someone. So bam, you want something forbidden. Murder is forbidden, right? Always has been. That is definitely what's happening here. You've created murder in a world of immortality. That's really cool. Additionally, what I'm thinking as another twist, so if we're following this group, for as long as we are, I'm imagining that like very early on, one of the people in the group get wiped out and like replaced, you know, like kind of like Invasion of the Body Snatchers style.
Yeah.
You know, and that is one of those interesting, like I've been a reverse corporate spy this entire time, you know, that kind of thing. But let's get family involved. Courtney, you love families getting involved. So what would you suggest we start by reconciling the twist here?
I think it would just, in this scenario of the upper class turning the middle against the lower, especially, that really amplifies family tensions and like how far are people willing to betray their own blood in return for this immortality? Like if family members of maybe the original netrunners or hackers who developed this free code, like if they have an inkling of what's going on, are they going to be the ones to like turn them over to the corporations?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So rather than like, hey, we're threatening your family, it's like, hey, your family is threatening you.
Exactly.
Like that kind of thing. Yeah. That's good. That's really good.
And it could even be like a younger part of the family, like someone who's essentially innocent, like a kid who doesn't really know or understand the full implications of what's going on, but they hear like, you can get 5 free lifetimes if you help turn these people in. And this kid's like, wait, my uncle and my aunt are into this stuff. Man. Like,
right.
I heard them chatting one night about it when nobody else was around.
Imagine telling like a 10-year-old now, hey, I can turn you into a Mr. Beast level like YouTuber. Yep. And they would probably slit their own parents' throats to do that, right? good portion of them would. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
Like, also, that is a horrible new Mr. Beast video. Like, I gave this kid $1 million to kill his parents.
I asked 1,000 kids if they would kill their parents. See what happens next. You won't believe it.
First one to kill.
60% said yes. 20% said no. 10% had already done it before they responded.
The first person to kill their parents gets this bag of $1 million. Oh,
so another thing we could do to have family involved. It's the standard thing of like maybe one of the people who's supposed to be busting this stuff up is trying to get a copy for themselves to give it to their child. That's so cool. I'm going to get a copy of this, and then I am basically going to help my child kill somebody so my child can live forever with me.
That's a great idea. I also just had an incredibly depressing thought as well, if we're talking about children. So Clark, you had mentioned earlier that producing a new child, like creating a new child in the world of immortality is probably going to be very costly. Or it's going to be like incredibly difficult to do so. Imagine if corporations, you know, like the ones who are basically selling birth, because, you know, like if you're in a sleeve body, it's much more difficult to create human life, I would imagine. Imagine if they just started selling like AI, like babies in sleeves with the idea that like, oh yeah, no, this is totally your kid, but it's actually like a corporate owned like AI entity.
Oh, good God.
Something like that.
Yeah.
It's a super dark timeline, but I genuinely see that as like a possible thing, you know.
Darkest sketch. Yeah. Oh, sounds great.
Yeah.
I like that.
And on that note, I feel like we've given this enough before we truly let the existential dread settle in. I feel like that's a good place to leave it with a pair of really interesting world building settings. That's for damn true.
Mm-hmm.
So Clark, As we are fading into eternity here, why don't you go ahead and tell people where they can find you, or at least like representations of your meat sleeve on the internet?
Yeah, you can find me on YouTube as The Magic Engineer. You can also find my website, which is crrowanson.com. That has not been updated nearly as much as it should since I have been enjoying YouTube so much. Also, because I'm sure you have a surplus of money and not nearly enough people asking for it, you can also follow and join me on Patreon. I do have a number of extra things on there for people, including huge discounts on the coaching. There's videos that only you guys will have access to. And as that community builds, I want to do a bunch of fun things like some Patreon-specific game nights and things like that. So consider checking it out. If not, that's okay.
No, it's not okay, Clark. They need to go check it out.
Check it out. If you don't join, it's okay. I'll say that.
There we go. That's acceptable. That is acceptable. You should go peruse at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Clark Schilling out of the way. Guess what, baby? Schilling is in my court now, all right? So for us, if you want to submit your own prompt and have us build your world, guess what? We got a website, worldbuildwithus.com, where you can click the link, follow the instructions. Boom! We'll be building your world in a reasonable amount of time. We're on social media. We're on Twitter for some reason, at Let's World Build. We just got a brand new YouTube. And by brand new, I mean it's at least 7 weeks old at this point. But it's new to us. And you should go and subscribe, like, and maybe not pitch the Mr. Beast idea like that we did. But, you know, like, maybe leave a comment and give us your best fake Mr. Beast headline or title. Because, man, there's a bunch of good ones. Anyway, we too, Clark, have a Patreon where you can go and give us money, and we too will offer such benefits, not like personalized coaching like Clark has. That's fucking crazy and awesome, but we got some cool stuff on there. Extra podcasts, patron only Discord chats. By the way, we also have Discord. Go find that as well if you want to come chat with us more directly.
Well, but real quick though, if you need a vote of confidence in the Patreon, I am a patron of World Build
That's
with
true.
Us.
That's so. True.
Yes.
I do want to, that while that is true, I want to make sure that people know being a patron does not mean you get to come on the show. Like, just tossing it out there in case there's any misconception. That's not what's going on here. Anyway.
It's the hidden tier we don't talk about. No, seriously, it's not there. I'm just making it worse for you. I'm sorry.
Tier on Patreon. Yeah. All right. With all that stuff out of the way, thank you all so much for listening. Remember that we love you very much, and we're going to get through this together. Until next week.